I've been interested in the role that scientific unorthodoxies play in the progress of science. When I was working in electrochemistry, I guess like most people working in science, I hadn't really thought much or learned much about the history of science. I thought science was done by something called the scientific method. I became interested in the Loch Ness Monster and wanted to find out what science said about it, and found that science didn't say anything about it. It turns out that there are many topics like that that people are interested in, that science, you would think, would have something to say about, but doesn't.
Why doesn't it, Henry?
One of the reasons is, with something like Loch Ness, there's no obvious way in which you can get definite information in a reasonable length of time. And scientists nowadays have careers, they have professions, and they have to get results. So they have to choose things to work on that are almost guaranteed to give some results that they can publish somewhere.
Now, you're not a debunker. You like to investigate. You want to find out what's going on in the world of science. For example, the Loch Ness Monster. What kind of conclusions did you deduce after you looked into that?
There definitely are some unidentified animals in Loch Ness. The marvelous thing about the mystery is that no known animals fit the bill. There are excellent reasons why they can't be mammals, why they can't be reptiles, why they can't be amphibians or invertebrates or fish, and yet they're there. And the evidence, the main piece of evidence, is a film taken in 1960 by a man called Tim Dinsdale.
Yes.
I got to know him. He gave me a copy of his film years ago. I've looked at that any number of times. There is no doubt that in 1960 there was a very large animal in Loch Ness that should not have been there as far as what's known about creatures in Loch Ness. It's so big that it couldn't have gotten in and out without being seen. The question is, what could it be? The best general answer is it's not just one. There's some family of creatures there. Scotland was covered with ice during the last ice age, so these things must have gotten in there after the ice age. So they came from the oceans sometime after 15,000 years ago or so.
Henry, could you say the same thing about Bigfoot, for example? Science doesn't investigate that creature, but so many people have seen it. So many people have described seeing some kind of a creature crossing the road or in the forest. How could science neglect to even investigate that?
Well, it's very, very difficult to know how you would go about finding out more than the eyewitness reports. People have tried. They've set up remote cameras and infrared devices and so on, audio equipment. We just don't have anything definite there. The special thing about Loch Ness is the existence of evidence like the Dinsdale film, lots of sonar contacts, and some underwater photographs. With Bigfoot, we have the one Patterson film, which is controversial. It's not clear-cut because, the definition isn't good enough. It was taken at too long a range and so on.
And the wife claims that she wore a costume, I believe.
Yeah. Well, I've seen a couple of analyses, one by a Russian fellow that really says this could not have been a costume.
Henry, your latest work is called The Origin, Persistence, and the Failings of HIV/AIDS Theory.
Right.
What is that? What does that mean by that?
It means that the theory that HIV causes AIDS is wrong. And I went into how this theory came about and why it is that the theory has persisted, even though there's mountains and mountains of evidence against it. It's the most astonishing thing I've come across in all of my years looking into unorthodoxies. I just couldn't believe what I was finding as I started to look into the official publications, Centers for Disease Control, Army HIV Research Group, peer-reviewed journals. If you put together all of the data that's been published about HIV tests in the United States, it's incompatible with a sexually transmitted agent.
So where does it come from, Henry?
What HIV tests detect is something that is constantly present over the period of 20 or 25 years since testing started. The geographic distribution of HIV in the USA has not changed. What's more, the distribution is about the same for blood donors, for members of the army, for members of the Job Corps, for women who have just delivered babies. Every group that is routinely tested for HIV shows the same geographic distribution. And it's not the distribution that AIDS had. You know, AIDS appeared in the early 1980s in New York, San Francisco, Los Angeles primarily, and a few other big cities.
Now, Henry, do you think it was concocted in a laboratory and then let out on the... You don't believe that?
No, and I don't believe that the HIV tests detect a specific virus. It seems that if you test HIV positive, the real meaning of that is that your immune system has reacted in some quite non-specific ways.